Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Beyer. Let's get growing. So I'm very excited to introduce my guest, Angie Schneider from South Texas. Angie and her husband, Carl, raised six children, and they call their family and their website the Schneider Peeps. If you check out their website, you'll find it full of resources for gardening. They're filled with beautiful pictures. She's got information on do-it-yourself and craft projects, all sorts of things about raising chickens, bees, homeschooling, and just living a simple, natural life. So I'm very pleased to introduce my guest today, Angie Schneider. Welcome, Angie.
Thank you, Jackie. I'm so glad to be here with you guys.
Well, we're glad to have you, and we're excited to learn more about your gardening journey and your family and everything that's going on in your little homestead. So go ahead and start by telling us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Like you said, my husband and I have six children. We have five still at home. One is married, and we have a grandbaby who's beautiful. And then our other five children range in age from 19 to 5. So we kind of have the whole gamut there.
Yeah.
And we have an acre and a half that we have a little homestead on. I fondly call us the lazy homesteaders because while we love to garden and we love our chickens and we love our bees, we will never have more than that. We will never have goats or cows or pigs or anything like that because it's just, that's too much work for us. We like to travel, and as my kids get older, I see that they have their own dreams that they want to pursue, and they don't really want to spend all of their time helping mom and dad in the garden and with livestock. So that's been a very conscious decision that we've made. When we bought our property, we bought it with the idea that we were getting older. We bought it 3 years ago. And our oldest son was graduating from high school, and we knew that our time of having lots of teenagers around would one day end, and we wanted something that would be a blessing to not just us, but the generations to follow, and not be a burden to them. And that was very, very important to us. So we chose to have just a small homestead, and we do garden about a fourth of an acre at this point. We also have a growing orchard that we're putting in. A little at a time. We do a few fruit trees a year, and it's amazing how quickly that can add up. I'm so excited. We have peaches for the first time this year. I went out and counted peaches. We have 74 peaches on our four peach tree. So
wow,
it's the first time, and those are like the highlight of my year so far. You know,
that's awesome.
It really is the simple things in life. So We do live in South Texas, so we can garden year round. Because of that, I don't do tons and tons of preserving other than tomatoes and jams and jellies and fruits.
Sounds like a lot there.
I know, but you know, like I don't have to preserve and I don't have to grow.
Right.
Tons of green beans and put them up for the winter because all winter I have kale and chard and broccoli and cabbage that I can just go out to the garden and pick. So we eat very, very seasonally because of that.
Excellent.
Which is really great. We picked our first batch of green beans this year, last week for the season, and my family was so excited to not be having kale or Swiss chard for dinner that night. They were so grateful. So I'm sure they will be tired of them come July, and when we get our first, you know, batch of kale in November, they'll be excited for that. So it's just fun that the eating seasonally is really fun.
That's awesome. And, you know, that's a big part of what, you know, I started the podcast and we started Mike's Green Gardens, website is about helping people learn how to, you know, grow their food for the year and kind of you know, maybe not grow all of your produce, but really supplement. And so you're doing just an amazing job feeding your family off of your just a quarter of an acre, which I think is important to share with people, like how much produce you can get off of a small amount. And also the orchard, like we put in a fruit orchard, fruit trees, I think in 2009 now, has it been? No, just like 3 years ago, 4 years ago. And I am just amazed at how many apples we're getting already and different fruits. So yeah, it grows quick. So I always like to begin by hearing about like your first gardening experience. Like, did you grow up in South Texas? Is that where you're from?
I did. I actually grew up on Padre Island, which is a beach. So there really wasn't any gardening going on in the sand. I did not grow up gardening. I mean, we lived like a mile from the Gulf of Mexico. So it was a very beachy area. My husband, however, grew up in a military family and moved all over the U.S. with that and growing up. And so when we got married, he was the instigator of all of this. He's very much an adventurer, and he's an Eagle Scout, and he loves to hike. So we would find these trails to go hiking on, and he would find wild berries, and I would hope that they were okay to eat because I had no clue if they were okay or not. But he assured me they were, and they were. And then he wanted to grow some tomatoes. So this friend of ours at church grew it was a horticulturalist. And so he showed us how to grow some tomatoes in our little single wide trailer in the trailer park that we lived in while we were still in college. And then after we had kids, it just became something fun to do. I have great memories of visiting my grandparents' little homestead, and my grandmother gardened a lot. So she was a huge source of information for me once we really started gardening.
Was your grandmother, like, is that your very, because I usually ask, like, you know, tell us about the very first time, you know, your first experience gardening, like, who were you with? What'd you grow? You know, how old were you? Were you a little kid or an adult? So was that it with your grandmother?
I've been with my grandmother. We didn't live near, you know, Texas is really big. So we lived, you know, like I said, at the beach, and they lived in Central Texas. So we only visited a couple of times a year because it was probably an 8 or 9 hour drive from where we live. And so, but when we did, you know, we would always go out into the garden with her, and then we'd collect eggs from her hens that she had. And so those are my very first experiences with gardening. And it's interesting, my dad grew up in that, in a farm, and he does not have fond memories of that. And so it's been somewhat of a paradox for me that, and I find that often, that kids who grow up on a farm where, you know, you need to grow to survive, there's a pressure that, you know, some of the rest of us, that we do it for enjoyment and to supplement our food. We don't really have that pressure. I mean, if our tomatoes don't make, it's okay. We can go buy spaghetti sauce at the grocery store. You know, with my dad, there was that pressure always. And he did not have fond memories of growing up. And he never understood why we would even want to live this kind of life. It's almost like it skipped a generation. And so because of that, that's part, I think, of our motivation to make sure that our homestead, that our children don't grow up with that kind of negativity about our homestead. We want them to look back on it with very fond memories. Yes, there's a lot of work involved, but it's not always work all the time.
Now, what about your dad? Like, do you have uncles and aunts? Did any of them, are they all that way? Is whole family?
I have one uncle who has a horse farm. But none of the others are into farming at all.
So, well, it's interesting. A lot of my guests say that when they were kids, they didn't want to have anything to do with their parents' garden, and they're surprised that they found themselves in a gardening profession as they got older. Mm-hmm. And my husband definitely grew up kind of like that, where, you know, his mom baked everything and they grew their vegetables and things, but he seems to love it. But his brothers don't grow as much food. So, yeah, I think it depends. One thing I always like to encourage listeners is that even if your kids do give you resistance and they say, I hate this and I don't want to have any part, you know, that sometimes they do turn around and they do like it later. So it's, you know,
yeah,
you just
they never know.
But I like your guys' attitude about not pressuring them. And I do think probably that would make a big difference if you had to grow your food to have tomato sauce in the winter as compared to, you know, having options. That would make a big difference.
Right. And I do want to say our oldest son, he was probably my biggest resistor in the garden growing up. But he just put in his first garden for him and his wife and is so excited about it. And so my husband and I just laugh about that, because whenever we would say, okay, it's time to go work in the garden, he'd go, oh, I have math to still do. I can't go work in the garden. And so that to me is really funny. And it was very fulfilling when he said, you know, Mom, what tomatoes should I grow, or when can I plant whatever? I want to do a little, you know, square foot garden for my wife and I. And that really just warmed my heart.
Awesome. So, Angie, tell us, what does organic gardening or earth-friendly gardening mean to you?
I think for me, it means using the least toxic ways of gardening, of methods, I guess. So, because we keep bees, we are very careful about any kind of sprays or any kind of chemicals that we would use in our garden. But that makes it also good for the earth, not just for the bees. It's mm-hmm. good for us personally. So we wind up using, if we have to use something, we try to use, I'm sorry, I'm babbling. We try to use very, inclusive methods. So we practice some crop rotation, not perfectly, but you know, we do the best we can with that. We practice some integrated growing, where we plant, instead of doing long rows of crops or even one box of just one thing, because we do use raised beds, we'll plant two or three different things, within that 4x8 box. Kind of spread our garden out some with that. If we need to use some kind of pest control, our first thing that we try to do is just what I call hand-to-hand combat, just going out and squishing eggs, you know, on the underside of leaves, or squishing bugs. Occasionally we will have to use something that that would be considered a pesticide, like maybe dipple dust or BT, you know, for cabbage worms. But that, again, we try to use it the least amount as possible. Mm-hmm. We are okay with sharing some of our garden with pests. Mm-hmm. So we just plant extra. We're also okay with some level of cabbage holes caterpillar holes in our cabbage, or, you know, in our leaves. Our vegetables are rarely picture perfect, and we're really okay with that. So
cool. So who or what inspired you to start using organic techniques?
I think we just have kind of always done that. My husband and I have always been somewhat interested in whole wellness, and so we are very hesitant to bring any kind of toxins into our home. And so the idea of sprinkling or spraying the food that we're going to eat with a pesticide just never has really appealed to us. Mm-hmm. So for a short period, well, for about 6 years, we lived in Fort Worth, and there is a radio show called The Dirt Doctor, and it's Howard Garrett, and he practices organic methods. And so he was probably our first person that really knew what he was doing that we listened to when we were on the radio, you know, when we hear him on Saturday mornings on the radio. And he specializes in Texas growing, which was really great for us since we live in Texas. Mm-hmm. And so, Howard Garrett was probably the first person who really knew something that we began to follow and read his books and practice some of the ideas that he had.
Cool. And so then is that how you learned how to garden organically, or did you, was there some other things also, or?
Well, I think yes, from reading his books when it came to just, to like pest control and disease control, his books have been very helpful to us. He has a great book called Bugs, Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And so that for someone who didn't know the difference between a good bug and a bad bug in my garden, that book was very, very helpful. But, you know, I kind of have this gardening philosophy, which may or may not even be true or right, but that if you just put seeds in the ground and you water them and you give them in the sunshine, they'll grow and they'll be fine. Uh-huh. And you may have something come up here and there, but it's really, I feel like sometimes we make it so difficult. And so, I mean, yes, you need to put some, you know, organic matter in, and you need into your soil, and you need to build your soil and do all of those good things. But it's really not as complicated as I think that sometimes we try to make it.
Absolutely. So tell us about something that grew well this year or last season.
Last season, we had a great cantaloupe patch, which we were cool. So excited for. You know, and it's funny because we planted so many tomatoes. And I probably need to say we have had a drought for the last 3 years. We've been in drought conditions. Mm-hmm. So it has made gardening very challenging. I think our drought is breaking because we've had rain for 6 weeks now.
So,
yeah, it is very nice. And the trees in the garden are loving it. But so last year I planted about 50 tomato plants, and they just struggled. And on a whim, I threw out some cantaloupe seeds in the back of the garden, and they went gangbusters. We probably harvested 40 cantaloupes. And
wow.
So we wound up having to, like, we froze some, we diced them up and froze them to use in smoothies. And it was just like too much. And it was just really funny to us that we had planned, and I had calculated how many tomatoes we needed, and I had done all this work, and I had started them ahead of time. I did like all the right things, and we were not able to can enough spaghetti sauce and hot sauce for probably only 6 or 7 months of the year. And then, like, we just on a whim did the cantaloupes kind of last minute before one of our little rainstorms, and they were just like the highlight of our garden. So
nice.
You just don't know what you're gonna get.
I like that. So, and there's nothing you can really think of that made the cantaloupes grow so well? Just that kind of a season, or?
I think it was that kind of a season. I think that we threw them, we had had an old compost pile had been there. Uh-huh. So I'm sure that helped a lot. But it was just really funny to us that it was such an afterthought. Hey, let's throw some seeds there and see what happens.
Cool. I hope that works for us this year. I bought some cantaloupe and watermelon seeds from this awesome company that specializes in Rocky Mountain seeds and seeds awesome for high climates. This guy, I guess, that brought them back from Russia. And so we're going to put those in, and that's kind of going to be an afterthought. So we'll see what happened. My husband was like, what did you buy?
Well, I hope they work for you. That would be awesome, because I bet you don't get...
No, we don't. So it would be great to get some melons in the fall.
Yeah,
so how about something you're excited to try this next year coming up? Is there something new you're going to try?
There are. We are trying some luffa this year.
Ooh.
Which, for those who don't know, the little scrubby things that you buy in the bath department of your local Walmart that you scrub your body with is actually a squash. And so they need a really warm climate, which we have. And so we have planted, I guess, eight little hills of this loofah. And you can actually eat the immature pods or squash when they're young. And then when they become full grown, you let them dry out, and then you peel them and you wash them. And it's that sponge that you buy in the bath department.
So, weird. I always thought that was something that grew in the ocean.
Huh. Yeah, me too. Me too. And so we grew them a few years ago, and we only had one plant that came up, and we got like three little sponges from it.
But you did get some.
We did. And so so I planted more this year, and thinking that would be a really fun gift. Like last year I made spa sets for the adults in our family for Christmas. Uh-huh. And I thought, well, how fun that we do this year and have a homegrown loofah in there also. So that is one thing I'm trying to concentrate some this year, is using the things that we grow in the garden as gifts. And so we're growing extra herbs this year. And I'm hoping to give all of the adults in our family, like the couples, a set of spices for their kitchen.
Nice.
So I'm really excited about that too. I've not been a huge herb grower, and so I'm learning some different ones.
All right. I think you're going to enjoy that. And, you know, herbs smell good, and they have tons of flowers, and they come back every year. I love herbs. Mm-hmm. So, and what a great idea to grow gifts for friends and family. All right. So I got to ask, where in the world did you find seeds for these sponge squashes? Because people are going to want to know that. I think a lot of people are going to try that this year.
I got them from a website that I believe, and I can email you later if this is incorrect.
Okay, and I'll put the link in the show notes for sure.
You probably even know it's where you can get in contact with local people. Maybe it's called Get Local.
Huh, okay.
I don't know. I'll have to email it.
Okay, well, we'll put it in the show notes. No worries. Cool. That sounds exciting. And probably we can probably Google loofah seeds maybe, but be nice to have the link. So tell us about something that didn't work so well last season. You said the tomatoes, maybe that's...
Tomatoes, yeah. Also, we had a huge issue with vine borers last year. So this is another example of how what works one year may not work another year, and that's part of gardening. You just have to kind of go with the flow. So year before, we had so many squash and zucchinis that I was the squash lady at church. Like, bring them. I would bless people with them. We dehydrated some for the winter. We had so much. You know, we made zucchini brownies and zucchini cookies and zucchini bread, and we put them in eggs. And so that was the year before. And then so last year, I thought, well, that was too many. I need to grow a few less plants this year. And so I did. Mm-hmm. So there is a moth called the vine borer moth, and she lays her eggs at the base of vines, mainly squash type vines. And when the caterpillars emerge from the seed, they bore their way into the vine at the soil level, and they eat the plant from the inside out. So you don't really know you have a problem until you go there, and it looks in the early morning, and it looks like your entire plant is just dehydrated and gone. So last year we were attacked with those. We had those in every bed that we had squash and zucchini in. And so I was like asking my friends, do you have any extra squash and zucchini? Remember, I gave you some last year. You should give some. My family really wants them. So anyway, hopefully we won't have those this year. We wound up tilling that particular moth overwinters in the soil. So the beds that had squash and zucchini, we had to go ahead and till those up in the fall and then again in the early spring. Then we added a whole bunch of compost to them because we know that if we killed the vine borer moths that were overwintering, we probably also killed a lot of, you know, earthworms and good stuff. So we added a lot more compost to them, and then we're really and then of course we're planting in different beds this year. So we hope that we won't have the problem again, but that was just an epic fail. It was like, we just could not believe that we had such bad luck after such a great year the year before.
Mm-hmm. So. All right. Well, if you ever do have another great year, or even just on a regular year, one great thing to make out of zucchinis or squash flowers, uh-huh. or is take the flowers and kind of make like a, it's almost like a pancake mix out of like flour uh-huh. and water and salt and pepper, and make squash yeah. fritters. They're so good. You just fry them in a little yeah. olive oil. Yeah. Something to try. How about something you find is easy to grow and is generally successful every time?
I would say my basil. My basil. We have basil popping up all over our garden, and buckwheat. We have buckwheat popping up all over our garden too, because I use the basil. I just let go to seed, and because we have bees, I let a lot of stuff just go to seed instead of pulling it when I should. Mm-hmm. And so we wind up having random stuff pop up. And then I have this problem where I cannot pull plants that are perfectly healthy just because they're not where I put them. Uh-huh. And so I wind up having this really untidy garden because I just kind of let stuff go. I mean, I don't let it go, but I just let it grow where it is. I just felt like, well, it must be hardy if it's growing there and I didn't plant it there. And so the basil has done really great. We have basil all up and down our garden. And of course, when it flowers, the bees love it. And we love homemade pesto. So we can go through a lot of basil. And then last year, I tried an experiment with using some buckwheat as a green manure. Mm-hmm. But again, the problem came that they were so beautiful, I couldn't cut them down. And work them back into the soil. And so I let them go to seed. We harvested most of the seeds, but of course the seeds drop. And so every, all up and down the garden, we have these buckwheat plants coming up, and some of them have flowered. And so the cycle continues. Mm-hmm. So
cool. I like that though. And it's good to feed the bees. So
it is. It is. And so we have a lot of, you know, our, because our winter garden is coming to an end and our spring and summer garden is going, we have some beds that have, you know, flowering broccoli, or that really most people would have already gone ahead and pulled, and flowering kale. But I just go ahead and just leave it until I absolutely have to have that spot, just so that the bees can have it.
Now, do you actually have hives and like harvest honey and everything, right?
We do, well, our 17-year-old does. He is the resident beekeeper of our little homestead. He's the one who wanted bees. We all kind of wanted bees, but he really wanted bees, and he's diligent enough to do the work.
Wow.
So this is,
that's pretty mature.
It is. He's been keeping bees for 3 years now. So he,
wow.
It's been a great thing for him. So I think, we probably have 5 hives in our backyard. He also does live bee removals, so he gets called a lot during the spring and during the fall for that. And so he tries to relocate the bees somewhere, either giving them to another beekeeper, or we have friends that have allowed him to put hives on their property, and so he has some hives that are not on our property, just to kind of spread them out. Mm-hmm. And then he has to remove all the comb. When he does a removal, he has to remove all of the comb, all of the honey, or else other bees are just going to come back. So he processes all of that too. And so we've gotten, because of the drought, we've gotten very little honey from our own hives. Yeah. He's very, a lot of beekeepers will harvest the honey and then feed sugar water through the winter. And Gabriel won't do that. He'll just, he's very diligent. He'll just leave the honey for the bees because that's better for the bees. And so he's really good about caring for them, probably more so than me. I'd be like, hey, let's go get some honey. You know, I want some my tea. The bees, we'll just give them a little syrup. They'll be fine, you know. But he's very vested in them. And so he treats them very, very good. So we're really hoping with all of this rain that we've received the last few months that it will continue and that he will have a nice harvest this fall. So,
how many hives does he have?
Total on our property, he has five, and I think he has five on other people's property.
That's a lot for a young kid to take care of. He must be super responsible and just very mature. And that's nice. Okay, how about something you would steer new gardeners away from that you find is typically challenging to grow in your climate?
Oh, in my climate. In our climate, we can't grow things that require a lot of cold. So Brussels sprouts, rhubarb. Cool. Can't grow it here. You know, there's only maybe one variety of cherries, maybe two that would grow here. We only have three variety of apples that will even grow here. So you really have to know your varieties, especially in the fruit area. Uh-huh. Because if it needs chill hours, if it needs probably more than 400 chill hours, it's not going to grow. It's not going to produce here. It'll grow. You just won't get any produce from it. So.
Okay. So, Angie, which activity is your least favorite activity to do in the garden? Like, is there something you just got to force yourself to get out there and do?
Pull weeds.
Cool.
Pull weeds. Yeah, that's it.
How about your favorite activity?
My favorite activity, honestly, is just to walk the garden. I just love going out there and walking and piddling and, yes, picking a few things here or there. But my favorite is just being out there and observing.
Tell us about the best crop you ever grew. Was there a year that there was something that was just so fantastic you were just overwhelmed? I guess you kind of told us about the zucchinis. Was that it, or was there something else?
Yeah, that's probably it.
How about the best gardening advice you have ever received?
Probably the best gardening advice I've received is to just start small. You know, it's much better to start small and do something well than to start big because you have the faith to do so and be completely overwhelmed by it. I think it takes a while to get into a groove with a garden. Mm-hmm. And we've actually moved quite a few times. And so so it's like almost as soon as I get into a groove with a garden, we start over from scratch. And so, So so I think that's it, is just to be patient and not start too much too soon.
Nice. Have you ever entered a fair? This is kind of a new question. I just kind of threw in, thought I might ask some people about.
Fair?
Yeah, like a county fair or anything?
I have, but not for my gardening stuff. I have for sewing. And we used to live in a very small community where I think the whole county was maybe 20,000 people when my children were younger. And every year we would all enter something in the fair. It was fun.
Okay. How about your favorite tool that you like to use? Like if you had to move, which you seem to have done, but it could only take one tool with you, what could you not live without?
One tool. Well, if we were to move, I would have to say it would be my Mantis tiller, because that's what starts the garden for us.
Okay. How about eating or harvesting vegetables or fruit on time? Like, I get overwhelmed a lot. That things seem to come on a lot. I'll go down and pick a big, giant basket of lettuce and then, you know, maybe wash it the next day and, you know, eat it. And it just, I get overwhelmed a lot, so...
Yeah, I do, which probably is why we have more things go to seed than most people. But, you know, during the summer especially, you just have to know that there's that time that you have to make choices. You are either going to pick it and eat it, or pick it and preserve it, or just let it go. And I think really any of those decisions are fine. Or you could pick it and give it away. That's another option, obviously. Pick it and bless others with it. I think any of those are fine. You just have to consciously make that decision. And I think that when I get overwhelmed is when I haven't really made a decision, or I haven't made a decision and gone through with it. So I think, I'm gonna pick all the zucchini and I'm gonna put it in the I'm gonna grate it and put it in the freezer and do whatever with it. And so because I have that mindset that that's what I'm going to do, I wind up doing nothing because I'm so overwhelmed by the job. Whereas if I had made the decision, well, I'm just going to pick it and give it away. Well, picking it and giving it away is easy. So I could go out there and do that. And that's perfectly fine, too. So that's
I like that.
Try to keep from getting overwhelmed is just make a decision and they're all fine. All those decisions are fine.
Thanks. I like you sharing your honesty and, you know, the way, cause that's probably what does happen to me a lot is like, I think, oh, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And then the next thing I know, I have a bag of spoiled something in the fridge and then I feel really guilty. And so maybe I just have to like make that decision, be more realistic about what is going to happen, what's going to get done. And then also I think right. I might have to, you know, buck up and be a little more conscious about you are going to go do this. It's I like what you said about it's a short season, so maybe I just have to adopt that attitude a little more.
Yeah.
How about secrets for preserving food or making it last at all? Do you is there anything special that you like to preserve in a certain way or anything? You were saying you make tomato sauce and hot sauce.
We do. We make a lot of spaghetti sauce and hot sauce for the year. We also make a lot of pesto, basil pesto. My family loves that. And so we make a lot of that. And then really one interesting thing that I've been doing this year is dehydrating our kale and making kale powder. And I've just been sprinkling it in everything, just a little, you know, pinch or two in my rice or eggs or whatever that I'm making. And it looks like parsley. Mm-hmm. And my family doesn't really care because they can't eat. There's no flavor to it really in that stage for whatever reason. It doesn't taste like kale. And so they'll go, Mom, what's this green stuff in the rice? I'm like, oh, it's just green stuff. It's like cilantro. They'll go, oh, okay.
Cool.
But it's kale and we're getting more nutrients. And so I have these two quart sized jars that are just full of kale powder. So I'm very excited about that, of finding new ways to use some of those preserves.
Cool. Now, do you make kale chips at all? Do your kids like those?
Only two of them like those. So mm-hmm. we don't make them very often, but we do make them sometimes.
Patty Ann Bennett, who was on I think she's like episode 8, had a good recipe for kale chips. So they were really good. I never really got into kale until this year, you know, with the green smoothie movement. I was trying some more and I told Mike we should try to grow some this year. I've certainly never grown it. So something kind of new for me. And she gave me some kale chips to try that were just delicious. And then that kale powder sounds good to put in rice and eggs. That sounds like a good way. Maybe I can sneak some of that in some of the food I cook around here. Okay. How about special techniques for cooking? Anything weird or unusual that you grow down there?
I don't know. I don't think that we grow anything weird or unusual.
That's fine.
I'm trying to think. Yeah.
How about a favorite recipe you like to cook from the garden?
You know, one of my favorite things to do is to go out to the garden and just see what's available. So so maybe we'll have some green beans or maybe we'll have a squash or zucchini and a carrot or two and some green onions. We try to keep a bed of green onions going all the time. And so I'll just pick a little hodgepodge of stuff. We'll bring it in. We like to saute it in butter and mix and boil some noodles. And then when the noodles are done and the vegetables have been sauteed, we mix them together and I put some of that basil pesto on there.
You're making me so hungry.
I know there's this anti-pasta thing going on, but we love it. And so we mix it in and sprinkle it with some Parmesan cheese, and that makes such a fun, good lunch for us.
You know what I was going to ask you? How do you preserve the pesto? Do you can that, or do you freeze it, or how do you do that?
I freeze it because it does have a lot of garlic in it, and you're not really supposed to can garlic.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the USDA does not recommend canning garlic, I guess. So I've researched it and looked at that. And so, in tomato, in spaghetti sauce, it's okay because tomatoes have so much acid in them, but there's no acid, you know, in the basil or the other things. So the olive oil. So I just leave it in canning jars, in little pint-sized jars, but we put it in the freezer.
Oh, okay, cool. How about a favorite internet resource?
A favorite internet resource. You know, there's a lot of blogs that I really like. Uh-huh. I am part of Homestead Bloggers Network, and they curate a lot of different blogs. And I mean, you can find almost anything that you want to grow on that. So that's really fun. Okay. Yeah.
All right. I'll try to find the link for that to put in the show notes too. Okay. How about a favorite reading material, like a book or a magazine?
I really like the Howard Garrett books, and partly because he writes specifically for Texas. I also like Urban Farm magazine. I really like that one. Even though I'm not really an urban farmer, I feel like my homestead is small enough. It's just got some great stuff in it.
Okay. Now, do you have a business? Is your blog kind of like you have some books? Let's talk about your book, your gardening journal.
We do. We have actually several ebooks. And so the gardening journal is by far our most popular one. It's called the Gardening Notebook. And I wrote it because for years I kept a gardening notebook just on my own, where I would have a page for each vegetable, and I would write what I was learning about growing that vegetable or that fruit. And that it was very helpful when we moved to a new place. I would keep all kinds of information in it. And then one day, very sadly, it got put in the burn barrel. And I'm not sure exactly how it happened. I refused to try to figure out which kid did it because I was really mad at it. So it didn't matter which kid did it. So anyway, I lost it. And so
oh
I started keeping the notes.
My heart's breaking.
I know. I cried. My husband's like, it's just a book. I was like, it's 5 years of gardening notes. It's not just a book. And so I started trying to reproduce what I remembered on my blog. I have a page on there called In the Garden, and I have some posts about how to grow different vegetables and fruit. And so as I was, and then I realized I'm really more of a pen and paper person, and I really needed it in a paper form. I couldn't just do it digitally like most of the world does these days. And so I started printing those up. And then my husband said, man, there's a lot of good information in there. I bet others would buy that information from you. And I was like, you think? And so that's kind of how the book started. It was really my personal book, but then we've added to it so that anyone can have their own personal book. We've left a lot of blank space in it so that you can write your own notes. So while there are the vegetables that I have for just very common vegetables, I have, you know, how to grow them, common pests or problems that they have, how to harvest and store them, and then each page has planting dates for your area, because of course my planting dates are going to be very different than your planting dates, and suggested varieties for your area that you would write in. And so the idea is that you take and you print it up, and it's about 120 pages, And then you make it your own. You add your own stuff in there of things that you want to plant. So if you love to plant rhubarb, then you would print up a blank page and you would write rhubarb. I mean, it's not completely blank, but you know what I mean? A blank form, I guess I should say. And you would write, rhubarb on there. And then you would start keeping notes of how to grow rhubarb in your area. And so, there's a section on, having your garden layout. And so there's graph paper in there for that. And then there's, a section of resources and of, a plant profile, section. And so a lot of these, the first half has a lot of information and the last half has a lot of printable pages for you to really create a notebook that is just for you in your climate and for your family. So that's the gardening notebook.
Nice. That just sounds awesome. And I think that's so important. We have gardening journals all the way back. We got married in 1993. And so sorry to tell you, I guess. But to me, that's the best to go back and look and see, you know, what grew, what do you remember? For me, the thing I like to put in there the most is so I can remember the next season. What did I want to grow more of? We need more broccoli plants or we need more sweet peas or, you know, what did we run short of? It seems like what's in there the most, right. But it's nice to know, you know, what day did you plant? What day did you harvest? And then, you know, did we have an early frost that year? Just little notes to, I have to say, I have gotten quite lazy and I've gone the other way, the digital way, where I don't draw as many pictures and there's more pictures on my, I kind of rely on my computer to keep the little data. What day did I take this picture? Which there's one year I transferred over, like I think it's 2009 and everything says like 1969 and there's not one different date. So I don't know what happened that year, but you know, that's what happens when you rely on a computer. I'm with you, the pen and paper. I like that.
Yeah, and I really thought that I would enjoy doing it digitally. Mm-hmm. But I guess maybe because I blog and because we write ebooks, I'm in front of the computer enough that I don't want to. And I can't really take my computer out to the garden with me.
Yeah, because even if you do, it's hard to see the screen. The glare just makes it, for me, impossible to work out there and on my computer.
Yeah.
Which is probably a blessing for me in disguise. Although I laugh. I'm like, I am the mobile girl. Because the other day I edited one of the interviews on my drive to Missoula. It was like a 4-hour drive and I have like my computer on the front seat and I'm like listening to the episode. And my husband's like, you're crazy. But I really only had to make 3 stops and hit pause 3 times. It wasn't so bad, but...
That's funny.
I can write a blog post anywhere, like, you know, on top of a mountain, going over the pass, you know, driving at night, and just I'm always on the computer, it seems like. So, but I definitely, you know, I don't know if you've seen our website, so I do a lot of the artwork and paint in our garden and journaling about it and just drawing little pictures. I'm notorious for like making sketches with stick figures that you can remember. And like, you know, when you look at them, it'll bring back much more of a memory than I think just writing the words. So anyway, well, cool. So I definitely want to encourage listeners to go to Angie's website and look at the gardening notebook and get one, because there's nothing better than having a record of what worked in your garden and what you want to know and put it in a safe place. So, Angie, here's my final question. If there was one change you would like to see to create a greener world, what would it be? For example, is there a charity or an organization you're passionate about or a project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either locally or on a national or global scale? Like, what change would you like to see?
I think the thing that I would like change the most is people's attitude about cheap food. I think that we've become a culture that demands cheap food, which makes it harder for farmers to grow food in a way that is sustainable, in a way that really supports community and supports the environment, and we have to get over that. We have to realize that food is important, and then at the same time, it doesn't need to be cheap. That it's farmers need to get a wage. I'm rambling again, but farmers need to be able to not have this pressure of what is the cheapest way that I can produce this food, because the American people want cheap food. Instead, they need to have this pressure of what is the best quality food that I can produce, because the American people demand quality, environmental friendly grown food. And I think that starts at the local level. That starts with me talking to friends, and them talking to their friends, and them talking to their friends. I don't know that there can be like a national, you know, organization with that message. It really has to start with us.
I think that's beautiful. That's just perfect. Thank you so much for sharing that. And that's true. It really is important. And we do kind of have to look at our own values and what we're saying with our pocketbooks and what we're saying. So thanks for sharing that. And I think also the way that your family is living and supplementing your food bill helps you. And that, you know, if we can encourage other people to do that so that they can supplement their food bill and then have a little extra to spend, really works. And the way that you've talked so much about, you know, making it easy, making it simple, doing it conveniently, I hope will inspire some people to see that it doesn't have to be such an giant undertaking. So just last, do you have a inspirational tip or a quote to help motivate listeners to reach into the dirt and start their own garden?
I think really just start. Just mm-hmm. throw some seeds out, water them, and see what happens.
Nice. All right. Do you want to share how to connect with you?
Sure. You can find me at schneiderpeeps.com. And that's S-C-H-N-E-I-D-E-R-P-E-E-P-S. And then we're on all the social networks, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and they're all at Schneider Peeps is our name. So yeah, we'd love to have some of your listeners come visit us.
Okay, listeners, get out there and check out Anzi's website. It's full of just beautiful pictures. You'll love to see her family and the different things. And she's got lots of great resources there for you to look at. So I encourage you to go to her website. And thanks for listening today. So and thank you so much for coming on and sharing your knowledge with us, Angie, and just the stories of your family. It's just charming, and they sound like great workers. So thanks.
Well, thank
you for listening to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'd like to encourage you to visit our website at awesomemontana.com. That's just AWESOMEMONTANA.com, like awesome Montana, all spelled out. And click on Mike's Green Garden and the Organic Gardener Podcast, and it will link right to the show notes and all the things we've talked about on today's show. If you like what you've heard today, we'd love it if you'd head over to iTunes and give us a 5-star review. It really helps us get found by other listeners and share the knowledge. Thank you again for listening. Have a great day.